Welcome to Dragon King Talk. I'm Jarl Thor, and this is a community talk on the Dark Sun Discord. Check out the Discord event and join us. Welcome to Dragon King Talk. I'm Thor, here with Tezza, a DM from the Sand Marches campaign, Chris Moneymaker of Dark House Rules, June Solar of Athascon, and Fitz of with a Pug's Life Dark Sun Gaming Discord server. We're here to discuss our topic of Undead of Ath. Welcome in, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good to be here.
I guess the first thing we want to talk about is the intelligent undead and how they differ from the rest of the D&D world. And I guess one of the biggest differences is that even zombies can be intelligent and thinking and have their memories from their former life.
Yeah, like I said, it's not a particular, it's not just powerful undead that are necessarily free-willed.
I think that actually makes for good RP, especially at lower levels, that you could have a thinking zombie, I think is one of the monsters that Dark Sun has, and use that character for your campaigns without, you know, having an overpowered, typically intelligent undead as it used to be in 2E. So it works really good for Dark Sun.
Yeah, it's a good source of information without having to use, like, speak with dead. And then they also have the ability to lie to you and or tell you, no, I ain't gonna talk or attack you or whatever, you know. On top of just being somebody that you might be able to talk into telling you something, or somebody who might give something away that they didn't intend to just because you caught them off guard with a question or whatever.
And I think one of the first times we see this is in Terrors of Tyr, the second monster manual that it's really written
Terrors
about.
Beyond Tyr.
Or was it written about in the LSD as well?
No.
So always the OBS doesn't have anything, but if you guys have the old Dragon magazines, in Dragon Magazine 173, Troy Denning writes an entire article about the undead of Athas, and I think it just lays it out so well. Not only, but it also gives a bunch of tidbits of who the Wanderer is. And if you all take a look at that, I mean, you would get a bunch of information.
Yeah, some interesting art too.
Wow. So there's a decent history with Dark Sun and intelligent undead, and why it's kind of a mainstay of the undead of Athas.
How have you guys played it in your campaigns?
Yes,
I have. In fact, I've used the story of Calidne, that there are undead all about the city as well, you know, similar to Bodak. And the way I did it is I basically said, you know, whatever cataclysm occurred in the ancient city of Calidne created a host of undead that inhabit the city. And, you know, some of them, like in the old Monstrous Compendium Manual, I've made some fails, which are, I want to say, like gluttonous ghouls would be a good way to describe them, even though they're still all unique. I use them as diggers all around the city so that when individual caravans attempt to travel in that direction, they've laid pits and all kinds of things to trap them so that they fall in at the knees, and then the ghouls just start chomping on the legs of the people who get stuck in these sand pits throughout the ancient road of Calidne.
Lovely. We awesome. Recently had one, we're actually dealing with one in our Sand Marches game right now. The players went up against a fail and lost. It bit the head off one of our half-giant gladiators.
Sorry, I've just come back. I was looking through my Dragon magazines and didn't see 197. I know I've got the one that has that article you're talking about. It just didn't come to hand. And where the old ones are is where they're hard to reach on my bookshelf. So, what were you asking about if you'd used something? You're talking about using...
Intelligent Undead, how used it. The Intelligent Undead in Athos.
I've had a few where they were more like, you know, they were like a T-Liz or something, you know, and they were behind a plot that took quite a few sessions to before it eventually led to them. But I'm trying to think if I've got anything current going on right now in any of the groups that has an important undead aspect to it. I don't currently have one.
We had
when it comes to thinking undead. I did. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We were used one in the very first adventure for the Dark Sun Excursions. Used a rag.
Yes, I made a rag. Yes, and lightning zombies.
That's right. Yep.
Lightning zombies. What are those?
Yeah, they're in the in one of the they're one basically of the Dragon magazines like, as well.
Yeah, they're basically like they attack with their claws and they do a little really bit of lightning damage.
With some and when they other things, probably been 15 years since I've looked at them, so I couldn't say much more than that. But
well, that's not the undead that we ran into either. There was also a undead earth priest, a mummy in a temple. And actually, we avoided going to war with him and his group. And, you know, mummies a lot of times are intelligent, so that maybe that's nothing big. But his intelligence and personality was very much of the undead of Athos. You know, he had a history. He had a kind of whole a personality to him. So I thought that was very cool. He wasn't outright, you know, ready to kill us. We did run into one here another game ago that was actually a headless undead skeleton warrior, and his head disattached and attacked us separately. So that was pretty fun when my earth cleric smashed him with his obsidian mace, you know. So it was a lot of cool undead stuff happening in the Sand Marches. I really like it.
Cool.
Had a bit of a goosebumps feel
now,
to it.
I do have one big undead story when it comes to the game, but it's kind of a long one. I'll try to shorten it as much as I possibly can to keep it under, you know, so I'm not dominating the time. And it did take place. Huh?
I said, give us the short of it.
Yeah, the short of it. Without getting into the setup of the adventure, this was just one that I wrote for a local convention. And they ended up, the parties had to go down to the City of the Thousand Dead and trying to get a psionic artifact that I'd come up with that they'd created for to defend the city from Rajat's armies. Well, I also had a superpower, you know, they mention a super powerful creature that was never released. It was supposed to fight against there, and I came up with that too. But yeah, they basically spent the entire time there, you know, zombie apocalypse kind of stuff, where they were trying to stay indoors and fight what was inside. And they have these things called topies, I think is what they're called, that were from Mystara that I used, that were very much like the little miniature undead things from the Mummy 2 movie. But yeah, they ran into several powerful undead there that, and one of the groups actually released that thing, and that was pretty much it for them because it was intended to fight armies, you know, and they were just like five ninth level guys. So,
so it was like the undead Tarrasque.
Yeah, they put up a a valiant fight, but yeah, it was intended to just, you know, mop the floor with hundreds of people. And
nice.
And I think that's kind of the cool thing with undead. You can have small undead, you can have human-sized undead, you could have giants or colossal monstrosities that are the amalgam of multiple undead, but they can, they're all going to be a threat. They're all going to be a present threat.
Yeah, yeah, they're very scalable.
Yeah.
And very, and for a lot of people, they're, you know, it's kind of a scary idea. Maybe not so much now that there's that we've been super saturated with zombie TV and zombie movies the last 20 years, but you know, the idea of something that wants to consume you and also the body horror of becoming it, those can both be kind of played on.
Certainly. Certainly, and there's a lot of ways to become an undead in Dark Sun, and unique undead monsters. You've got rags, you've got meteors, rack spirits, doubts, tilses, like you mentioned earlier, a fail. You know, so there's a lot of different undead here that's only here on Athos.
Yeah.
Yeah, the good part about them is that, you know, no two undead are alike, so you will always surprise... Or you can always surprise your players by providing a unique undead, one with an actual backstory and personality. And, you know, it doesn't have to be one of these high-powered undead. It could be within the level range of your players. And you could almost make an NPC out of it, like what it looks like the Sand March's campaign has now. So, you know, this is one of the best things about Dark Sun and undead in the world of Athos.
And looking at that,
yeah, you could even do add little things to it, you know, just to make it unique. Like even if it's corporeal, especially if it's corporeal, because it wouldn't have much use for this if it were like incorporeal. But you know, have it where maybe once every three rounds it can blink, you know, where it's like, and I'm over here now, and now I'm over there and across the other side of the room, kind of thing. Something that. You know, just something that's not like, oh, this is a huge combat ability where it can shoot lightning bolts from its face or something. But it's just a, oh, that's something a little weird. I've never seen that in a zombie before. Or I've never seen that in a mummy before or whatever.
Let's There's have a look
so many
at that.
Little supernatural powers that you could draw from. And then, you know, then that one may not be terribly thematic for undead, but... That would just be one of the things that's just a big surprise. You know, your characters, your players would have no idea that that was going to come before it happened. It'd just be like they're all, they get it cornered and all of a sudden it's not there.
You was going to add something, Tezza?
Yeah, we could look at each of the different types of intelligent undead. As you were saying, the Dalt, which is D-H-A. Ooh.
The doubt.
Yeah. They're incorporeal undead who cannot rest until they return home, even after returning home.
I was going to say how I really like the Athasian wraiths.
Well,
they seem to be. They did the ghost right.
Yeah,
that's what
that's right.
The ghost should have been done.
Let me just finish this little bit.
All its possession abilities and all that.
Yeah. That's
yeah.
Right. Well, this particular one, is incorporeal.
I'm running the undead campaign. Hey,
excuse
right
me,
now.
I'm talking. Hello, can anyone hear me?
Centered around the.
Can you guys hear
no
Tezza?
Hear me.
I can hear him.
Yeah, because people keep interrupting me.
Centered around.
Well, I noticed that people don't seem like they can hardly hear you, Tezza, almost.
Okay. Let me.
Yeah, drop. Would you drop and then rejoin, maybe?
Yeah. All right. Is that any better? Can you hear me now?
There he is.
Invite Fitz back up. invite Tessa back up. Well, but Discord does this sometimes. Like, you won't be able to hear somebody talking, or you won't, nobody be able to, or certain people. It's weird how it does it.
Yeah, I've noticed that too.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you better now.
Okay. Oh, okay, great. So, I'll start again. I think it's a good idea that we probably target each of those intelligent undead, because each of them have, as you were saying, Chris, they all have their own individual little quirk, okay? As these are just templates, you can always add different abilities to them as well. And in the Terrors of Tyr book, it actually gives you a bunch of powers that each of these could possibly have. So we've got Doubts, which are incorporeal undead, who are spirits that are cannot rest until their physical remains return to their home. Even if their spirit is returned home, they just can't rest until their physical remains. And this is particularly true for like halflings who have died outside their beloved forest. So, yeah, like straight up, it gives you a great little side mission to maybe return a body to its maybe ruined city somewhere, or to the forest if it's a halfling, which could lead to further adventures, of course.
Yeah, has especially considering they'll come to you and ask you to do it.
Yeah, that's right. So you've got an undead ghost in front of you that's basically trying to communicate with you, saying, help me, help me. Has anyone played with anything like that in their games?
I have not, but I don't know if any of you have seen the Blue Box Dark Sun when it was active. They had a fantastic two-session story that it was actually based off another written short adventure or encounter that was written in Athos.org. And he used that as part of his encounter. I'm not sure if you guys were able to see that, but John did a great job with that.
Very cool. Yeah, I think a lot of good undead has been included in adventures before, but I can't really think of many intelligent ones that have been included in actual adventure modules.
Well, vampires straight up, they're intelligent undead, right? Mm-hmm. But also quite generic, and people have played them to death. So if you're looking for something new.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was referring to like Dark Sun, Undead, Spiffic. You know, I've seen some of them in some of the adventure mods.
There's one in Dragon's Crown, isn't there, over on that island?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hakar.
Yeah.
The Road of Fire as well have got a bunch of spirits that rise up and they sort of like act out what they were doing at the moment of their death when something big killed them all.
Well, and speaking of which, real quick, what do we think of the Caller in the Darkness? That's an undead creature. City of
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, oh, it's yeah. a That'd big conglomeration of undead, yeah. Yeah, somebody was asking, how do you kill that on the Facebook page a couple of weeks ago? And everybody's like, what, are you a player? Are you trying to cheat?
They knew the game. Kid could pull the wool over their eyes.
Yeah. I'll tell you one of my favorite types of undead to play, to send against my players. Not that I do it a whole lot, but just because it in and of itself is so scalable, is a Dwarven Banshee, because it can be, you know, it can have class levels. Depending on, you know, if you've got low level characters, you can use low level banshees or high level, depending on how difficult you want to make it for them. But you know, it could be all the way up to Ricard himself, you know, and because I've had them go through Kimalok, and then I had them come up through this like Kimalok's prison. It was just full of banshees, and they kind of parts of it were not full of banshees, but like certain outside parts of it in particular were full of banshees, and they had to do a lot of navigation and open a door, oh crap, there's one, close the door kind of thing. The only warrior in the group have that ability where, you know, the gaze ability it used, and they closed her out. They're like, oh crap, we don't want her in here with us now. there's a lot of fun stuff you can do with dwarven banshees, and they can sit down and talk to you if you want them to too. But
that's right. They also they're not the only ones that are scalable. Quite a few of them.
Quite a few of them can have
as in life as a stat.
Yeah, exactly.
For, you know, their hit dice, their THACOs, their attacks, and sort of stuff. Well, plus they then get the additional random or chosen special abilities.
So
that block pretty much has them all with psionics, but they can be different type of psionicist as in life. So
it's true.
There's quite a lot of gameplay brought out of that.
Was you going to add something, June?
I was going to agree with Tezza. One of the things that you guys can do is if you don't know already, in the old Dragon magazine 209, it actually has, it's called 1001 Faces of Death. I think just the pieces of it are somewhere in our Dark Sun Discord. I know Mark Hope made some changes to his, and I posted one a few years back, but it basically has how to grant powers to all the unique, intelligent undead in Dark Sun. And it had a host of general powers, some specific powers. A lot of them mimicked what we would think are typical undead, as in, you know, in generic D&D and fantasy and horror. And they added a lot of these powers here that were not psionic in nature, which was pretty awesome.
Oh, I got that right here.
Very cool.
Oh, hang on. It's the one with the priest raising the guy on the front, and the rats are all upset about it because they wanted to eat him. It'll probably open right to it. No, it didn't. I used to have a rubber band around this where I could open right to that one. But yeah, that was the one I was thinking of a minute ago when you were talking about the other article. I was thinking of this article. It has some kind of neat artwork in it too. Using the table of contents might be helpful.
What do you guys think about Rags? In the old Dragon magazine, Troy Denning says Rags are from the old races, so they're only human, elves, giants, dwarves, and halflings. This is before the Prism Pentat and revised. So we have to put it in that context. But Rags are normally millennia old undead that know parts of the history of Dark Sun. Anyone play with the Rags?
Yes. We did Rags. For me, it was 30 years ago, but we definitely, we used all sorts of dead 10-year campaign when Dark Sun was first brought out, but I can't say I've used them recently.
Sure you have.
That's because... from the was, oh, was that... it was a raid. Yeah, it was. Yeah. So if that was what Marek was in the Temple of Rahun, then he was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
There was two ways to actually win him over. So you could defeat him, or you could do something else with him. So it sort of came down to some reaction roles, and what players wanted to do if they try to communicate.
Yeah, and I wrote him that way because what Troy Denning wrote initially about them, he basically said, Rags are always found inside a shrine be it an ancient stone building, a deserted grotto, or whatever. They are extremely uncommunicative and will permit only those with moral character, allows the precepts preached by their ancient long-lost deity to enter their temples. Sometime a reg may even deign to speak with such individuals, though if only the individuals somehow prove themselves exceptionally worthy.
Oh, there was a rag. Those were rags in the temple in book one then.
That's right.
Oh.
They're not whites or anything or race themselves. They're actually rags.
Yep. Yep.
Wow, that's very cool. I did not know that.
And again, they're incorporeal spirits, so they're ghost-like. So in the book, they're like they're like shadows. They live in the darkness. You don't really get to see them much.
No, except when they inhabited the armor. That's it.
That's right. So that's a really cool little note there. They're all at least 2,000 years old. It has Terra's Beyond Tear. All old and mostly human, elf, dwarf, giant, and halfling. So a giant one. There you go. That'd be a nice challenge for someone. Now, we discussed Fail a little bit earlier. They're gluttonous undead who appear whenever a large amount of food is present. They try to remain in... conspicuous, but their insatiable hunger eventually gives them away as they eat every scrap of food inside. These ones could be found inside bars and taverns and kitchens.
I think if you're intelligent, you're running a campaign with like a trader or something. He's got a grain shipment. Yep. You might use them kind of the way they did the tribbles. And they just eat it all up.
Yeah. They can be whatever they were in life. So a rogue one with sneaky ability to be able to get in and out of places without being seen at night. And, you know, you notice your stocks disappearing a bit at a time. Yeah. So it's quite good opportunity for those. They are very deadly. So they have abilities to extend their jaw to over a foot wide and bite whole chunks of people and even bite limbs or heads on pillar roll.
Which be like old, be like old, what's her name from... Not the Living Dead, from Return of the Living Dead, when she comes running out of the fog and she bites that one guy and it's just like her whole face opens up. And, what's the actress's name there? I can't think of it, but you know what I'm talking about? Like 85, 84, Return of the Living Dead with the tar man and all that.
Yep.
She looks weird that first time that she comes out of the fog and attacks when she's all white looking. Changed her face.
That's right. And I suppose DMs could describe it in any way they want. Yeah.
Linnea Quigley, that's the name of the actress. Yeah.
again, those ones, as I was saying, they can be assigned undead, special undead powers. And in the Terra's Beyond Tear, there's quite a few. Like spell-like powers, drain PSPs, drain attributes, control other undead, magical claw attacks, and a whole gambit of different things that you can put in your thematic threat. Even vampires you can put in there. We've got one in the Sand Marches right now. The players are actually about to enter combat with it by the looks of it. as anyone else, I think you were saying you use them to dig ditches and attack people. Anyone else
Can't say that I've really put them to much use.
I thought, Fitz, did you have a story about an undead earlier that you was going to tell us about? I don't know if that was a rag.
Well,
or not.
I was just saying that I'm running an undead one with a T-Liz and some wraiths.
Ooh.
Like an undead PC campaign?
Or those are the antagonists?
Those are the antagonists.
Oh, yes. Yes, very cool.
Players are investigating.
Potentially pretty powerful antagonists.
Well, let's have a quick look at what a T-Liz is. It says here that they're powerful defilers who died before completing their magical study. They continue their studies as undead and are among the powerful and dangerous undead. Most defilers are hunted down and destroyed by the Sorcerer Kings and the Veiled Alliance before becoming. They are valuable sources of information since they live for centuries, but they are evil and cunning and only associate the aid the living when it is in their own advantage. So how are the antagonists playing their character? Okay.
Well, in many ways, they would resemble most a lich in terms of their machinations. And in fact, I could have sworn there is a T'Liz that is a slave trader in the city of Tyr and elsewhere. I'm gonna do some research real quick, but I could have sworn I remember this.
So the T'Liz is a powerful defiler, then.
Mm-hmm. Hey, while he's looking that up, do you want to see that article he was talking about? The 1001 Faces of Death?
Yeah, go ahead and post it in the chat of a community stage event.
Okay, let's see. How do I do this? I go over to... I've done it before. Just got to remember how.
in the community event chat, there's a little chat bubble. And you can open the chat.
Okay. And then I can add it to that. Okay, cool.
Fitz, you said your group's facing off against a T'Liz then and some of its minions?
Yeah. They haven't. Well, I don't want to go into too much details, but yeah.
They could be listening.
You never know.
You never know.
But it's centered around the Siren Song Island. So when I started playing in 2020, I made a little adventure for that was around 3rd to 5th level, but the party went zagged instead of zigged, and so I never got to play it. And then they came back to it, and in the meantime, I got 8th level, 9th level characters going in, so I've had to buff it up some.
Step it up a notch, huh?
Yeah. And I've been watching a lot of paranormal shows on TV for like the past 6 months. So I've been trying to take a lot of techniques to, build the suspense and make it scary.
Yeah, so it's not just a bang, here they are, they hit you, roll initiative, yeah. Where you get some creep factor in going there.
And you try to split up the party and do all sorts of crazy shit.
Right.
I had one where I split, for the one we're in, I was able to split the gladiator half giant off, who was slaughtering everything left and right, and then possess him, and then have him come after the party. And it was, though, I think it was a week or two before Halloween, so I was trying to make it a scary, something scary. And it was funny to hear the player start, have a long pause, and then start to describe to the party how much trouble they were in. As he could do a hunt, he could do 113 points of damage max before critical round.
Very nice, very nice. It's always cool to see the players have to kind of struggle against your well thought out enemies, you know?
Yeah.
So I found the article that was in, it's in page 119 of the Monsters Compendium 2, and it's a Taliz called Kettlemir, who has spent countless centuries pursuing the dark defiler arts while maintaining an identity as a mysterious and powerful slaver in the city of Uruk.
Ooh, nice. That's very nice.
All right. And that one Dragon Magazine article I now have, it was 4 pages, and I just took pictures of it with my phone, but it's actually 4 facing pages, but it's in the group chat. Hopefully it's not showing me the actual pictures, but hopefully you guys can use it, because it does have some good tables to roll up something if you don't want to just go through and pick everything yourself. You want to.
It won't let me see those.
You know what? I think we have it as a PDF on here. I'm going to type 1001, and I think it's going to pop. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, that might be helpful. Yeah, I think the undead power tables and their abilities is something very cool. You know, I mean, having these different powers you can give these undead, that DMs can give undead to kind of like I was talking about the Sand Marches and the undead warrior with his two-handed axe and his head comes off and starts attacking the players. You know, it was very cool.
Yeah, the way they've got this set up, you could have no idea what you wanted starting out and just roll dice and come up with something.
Yeah, that's right. It's so crazy.
Because it starts with general power level and then power types. There's a lot of percentile tables on it.
Very cool.
And then explanations of the tables.
Let's talk about another undead, Tezza. Which one you want to select next?
Okay, so we're looking at Kaishaga.
Oh, I love those.
Kaishaga, aren't they the best, right? So Kaishaga are Athasian witches, often called the Dead Lords. Often called the Dead Lords. The Kaishaga are undead, similar to witches. They voluntarily sought undeath, believing it to be a form of immortality. They are incredibly powerful and extremely rare. The largest known collection of them is found in Valley of Dust and Fire. And
right, yeah, it's right around there.
Yeah, because there are several monsters from there that appear in that the Magma and, Golem, a couple others.
And I would say that's probably at least 4 or 5 of the, if not all of the Sorcerer Kings, have some sort of Kaishaga in their service as well.
Yeah, basically they say in the original thing for them, I don't remember on this, but they say basically that the dragon creates them as kind of a, okay, you're getting a little too powerful. I bet you're too valuable to lose, so I'll kind of stunt your growth right here and keep you around forever.
That's right. I like your brain. I don't like your ambition. And yeah. So yeah, they get told they have to become Kaishaga and then ritual say.
Well, they get blessed. The Sorcerer King obviously blesses them with undead. Yeah. You know, they should be honored to receive such a gift from their king.
That's right. That's right. This is my command, that you serve me forever.
Could have been worse.
Like, Yeah, it's like when Kallik says, I am their king and they should be happy to die for me.
That's right. Now, Tai Shaga, again, as in life, for their hit dice, Thaco, number of attacks, damage, special attack, special defense, they can be have a fanatical morale, which is really great. But you're looking at, like, you know, you probably want these to be pretty high level, like 12.
Or yeah, they're upper teens or even low 20s.
That's right.
Well, in the last place that I saw somebody use one was in the, what is it? I don't remember if it's Lawful Stupid or 10-Foot Pole, but the thing where he had them go and kill the dragon, he had some of those. Now, he watered them and the dragon down considerably so that they could, you know, he could have that finale, but he still used them in that.
They've got quite a good amount of psionic, telepathy, psychoportation, kinetic, clairsentience, spirit sense. Pretty good.
Body that's control, a true levitation.
Yeah, that's right.
Because these are also ones that are have class levels.
That's
because there was like. Yeah, there was like a Lord Warrior and a Lord Wizard and a Lord this and a Lord that and a Lord the other thing and Uradraxa.
Yeah, and, you know, those sorts of things are good. You can thematically name them as well. You know, some of them could be considered High Templars, Templar. Mm-hmm. Like, the monster stat is Uruk-hai Shaga, but, you know, name them whatever you want to name them, of course. There's a couple of examples of them in here as well. Zontra and Jagmorgul. And they both have an image of one. Templar. Oh, there's another one. Nelkor, a human male gladiator. Zontra is a defiler. And Jagmorgul is a... Oh, Cleric of Fire. Human male, C19, Fire. I'm standing to be Cleric Fire 19 level. Spell, wow. Right up to Firestorm at 7th level. Special Kai Saga powers, accelerate aging, cause disease, and increased attributes. Got a wisdom of 23.
Yeah, it sounds like they have some of the mummy abilities.
Yeah. Great hero of the past. While he was a great priest, he was better known as an explorer. He was captured by Hurtgel, like that, a powerful Kai Shaga, who was his latest transformed into a Kai Shaga himself. Good stories there that people can use as well.
Yeah.
These ones could be anywhere in Athos now. So.
Yeah, the Kashyyyk, you know, I always look at them as like the Lich of Athos, the mummy or the Lich of Athos, you know, or some unique form like that.
Looks like they can pretty much go where they want, when they want. There's no restrictions to them, like moving through the day or the night. Okay, you'd probably sort of consider it that obviously they're going to have like a -5 charisma sort of thing, right? See them in the streets, you're going to be running in terror. But yeah, they can move pretty open around the place as well. It doesn't seem like it's holding back from that sort of
thing. No. No.
Anyone else got examples of Kai Shaga they may have used in their game?
The closest I would come is using Dragoth. You could kind of say he's a Draco Kai Shaga, but not exactly.
Yeah, he's It's a little bit more.
He's got the cold attack. He's got a couple other things going that are very similar.
How can we? Well, then don't they mission? He's kind of like a Kashigara in the actual.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, so we can't go undead of Athas without talking about Dragoth, can we? We're it's not going to be able to.
That's your favorite dude. That's why.
That's really, really avoid not talking about the elephant in the room, huh?
No, that's rightfully so. We have to talk about Dragoth, don't we? I mean, we couldn't be a show of undead of Athas without Dragoth, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
Right. So he's a Kaishaga, right? Okay. Well, have a look at his stat blocks, and he is as in life, okay? And become undead, and he can't essentially level up unless something else happens. So,
which they kind of explore that in the Dragoth Ascending Adventures from Athas.org. But if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't his high priest turn him into this undead monster after he was assassinated?
Yes, something like that. Yeah. There's a little bit of a plot hole when it comes to his ascension and all that kind of stuff, but it's something you got to kind of work out for your own game. But
that's right. And some people might be having flashbacks to Star Wars, which is all possible. Okay, as Dark Jedi wanting to make clones, and maybe transfer his essence or something. There's all sorts of stuff you can come out with. Games for that sort of why is he making Dre? There you go. Some possible.
Well, and I remember like his high priest took him out to the woods with some of the refugees from the city, you know.
Took him down underneath, yeah.
Is that where they resurrected him into undead?
Yeah, it was down in the tunnels, yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it doesn't. There are definitely some plot holes with his story overall. But he is a Kaishaga.
Yep. And where can people read up on Dragoth if they want more information about
him? I will show you some more information on him. Now, this is just my stuff, but I did a complete write up on him that is.
Because people will be listening to this podcast, so I think if they can't see the chat, then you might also say where you can find this information.
You can get it on my Subscribestar page. You'll have to go down a few months because this was last year when I posted it, but it's still there.
Yep. Answer your question, Tezza. If the people listening want to find more information on Dragoth, they'll have to look in the City of the Siltsea box set for second edition, the revised box set, or the revised box set for second edition. And there's even some stuff on him in fourth edition in the main book. And there's also some stuff on Athas.org in the form of the three adventures, Dragoth Ascending, part 1, 2, and 3. So if anybody listening wants more information on Dragoth the Undead Kaishagar, or however you pronounce it, they can look there.
Kaishagar, yep. Look, I think you covered all the bases with that one. So we'll head on to the next one. So I'm not sure how to say it either, but Meority, M-E-O-R-T-Y, Meority.
Yeah, it could be Meority. That's how I always pronounced it, Meorities. Yep. But I don't know.
What about the Crags?
Oh, we discussed Crags.
You did that already? Okay, I must have been looking the Crags and the Craglings.
we'll come back and revisit that one possibly.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Tezza, for interrupting.
That's okay.
This is to Chris. No, I thought you said Rags, but no, we have not discussed the Crags or the Craglings. But I'm sorry.
They'll be next on the list. They can be next on the list after the meteor ice.
Right.
Brag. Next in the book.
Go ahead, Tezza.
Brag. Okay, I got cracked. Right. Okay, so the Meorities are undead who were once protectors of domain that vanished more than 2,000 years ago. They were placed in crypts with large amounts of treasure, so they might continue to look after their realms in death. They emerge from their crypts and hunt down those who violate their ancient laws. Each ancient domain has its own ancient laws and its own maorities. However, the boundaries of the ancient domains have been forgotten, and even the ancient laws are lost, except for those held over as customs by the people of the various regions. Those who see a maority's crypt seldom live to tell the experience. All maority are of the old races: human, elf, dwarf, giant, and half. So there's a couple of examples of that in Terras Beyond here. Again, they Proctor Directo of Antalis, Obrala, I think it says five something, Lawkeeper of Bodach. Well, there you go. There's a name we don't hear too often. Bodach. Green Age Guardians, set to continue watch over their ancient domain. So their domain, just the turf, just their ruined city, could be anywhere in a forest, in the desert.
Yeah, I think one of them talks about how it's guarding a tunnel complex or something where there's like a holy or a sacred spring or something. Of course, I may be thinking of one of the other types of undead here. Let's see.
Well, there's one, it's called Proctor Drelto of Antalis. That's the one that guards the mountains that surround ancient Calidne.
Yeah,
there's been a lot done on Calidne. There's some stuff up on Drive-Thru RPG, I think, for it. There's been some stuff done for it, I know that.
Yeah, it's pretty much the only area where that can be touched for Dark Sun, because it's an old Ravenloft area as well.
Yeah, Skeletor is actually running a campaign of Calidne right now in Fitz's Pug server.
Yeah, I ran my Mind Mage Ascendancy campaign, and of course, I ran it for 2 years. I ran two campaigns of it. I'm going to probably start up another one in the fall. But yeah, the culminating event obviously is in Calidne, and you deal with all things Calidnes, to include the Muortes and the Kshargas.
Oh yeah.
Right. So, So look, some great adventure hooks there. Like, you know, hey, your players want to get into Calidne. Then you got to get past this maority. Maybe trade a magic item with it. Maybe negotiate some other outcome, because it is studying the history of Athas. So maybe it might accept a book written by your preserver on the history of Athas, or some token of some sort. But they also control other undead. So their guarded area may contain quite a number of other undead creatures that it can control, giving it quite a challenge to get through, and some great roleplay options. Well, now our next, do we want to talk about those? That one,
the crags.
Right. Let's have a look at a crag.
They're basically undead. Elemental undead. Yeah, they're dead. That I remember, right? They're elemental priests that were killed by their opposing element or something like that. Been forever since I've used one, but
Right. So a silt, earth cleric getting killed by a water cleric.
Oh, that almost went. Go ahead.
Sorry, what's the opposes earth? Air opposes earth, and yes. Water opposes fire. Right. So yeah. So it'd be earth cleric killed by air cleric.
Yep.
May come back. Right. So, or a water cleric killed by a fire cleric. Yeah. The anguish and trauma of dying to the very forces of he devoted his life to, he or she, to opposing is sometimes enough to transform them to a wicked and bitter undead. Elemental lords quickly enslave such an undead cleric to their service. So that straight up there, elemental lords getting quickly involved in that sort of thing. Great role-playing opportunity for that as well. Anyone used a crag in their game?
Only when when my characters went to Gustanov.
For me,
see by the Celt Sea, but they've been there, and there is an encounter there that I went ahead and used that has a crag, if I remember right. Once again, that was like 94, so that's been a minute. I've slept a few times since then, but I'm pretty sure there was one there.
And June, you were about to say?
I said, what I was going to say was that for my Living Dark Sun campaign, which starts next month, the first few adventures take place right along the coastlines of the Silt Sea, and there definitely will be silt craglings.
Oh, yes. That sounds very cool.
Yeah. Crags look much like the individual they were when they died, except that they are also take on the appearance of the element that killed them. So a silt cleric may not wear very much, and may have something on their head, protect them from the sun a little bit, but maybe if they've got any exposed skin, it might look quite rough, or when the wind blows, little trickles of silt run off them. When they move, it looks like they probably every step they take, silt just like they leave a trail of it behind them. Rain. What would a rain rag look like? How would you probably just wet all the time?
Her elementals.
Yeah, that's right.
Just be like its skin's melting and just dripping everywhere it goes, and it's just secreting water constantly.
Yep.
There may not be a whole lot of easy way to distinguish him between him and a water crag.
Yeah, that's right. A magma crag on the other hand
might be bloated or something.
Yes, a magma crag says a mass of dripping molten earth, so they may look, may have like coloration in them.
Or when they take steps, the ground kind of smokes and sizzles with little bits of tar or magma.
Yep.
Very cool.
They can deliver a poisonous elemental transfusion with a bite as well. Their claws are their weapons. Makes a saving throw versus death, or his blood will slowly turn into the crag's element. As the blood changes, the victim suffers 1d4 additional points of damage per round. If death results, there's a 45% chance that the victim will become a cragling for 4 days. The infection counts as a poison or a disease for purpose of countering, so sweet water or even the cure disease spell will process instantly. So it's good that it's not a save or die encounter. They can be a bit harsh. But things like they have like magma jets and sunbeams, you know, can summon a small silt storm. It's only like 22 feet in diameter. Well, it's still pretty good size. That'll affect a whole party. As a bit of a silt storm comes up around, lightning bolts, flame strikes, water jets, showers of stone. Wow, that would be cool. And you could come up with any reason for these things to be around. They're just like, yeah, they died here on the spot, you know, been roaming that area for some time.
Just haunting it, yeah.
Usually found where one element threatens another and the clerics are sent to protect the patron. So maybe near various... we've got one in the Sand Marches and it just gave me a sweet idea. So...
Heck yeah. And I think that's the awesome part about Dark Sun Undead. They're just, there's so much, you know, innovation behind their design and thoughts that go along with the nature of the Dark Sun environment. So I just really like, their descriptions because of that.
You could run a Dark Sun, you know, the Undead Hunters campaign where we go, you know, our job is we're going to go out and kill one of every type of undead, you know, or something like that, you know. We're undead bounty hunters, that's right.
Collect them all.
Yeah, you could do a whole bunch of
kinds of ash. You could be ash of the Evil Dead and ash of Pokemon.
Oh yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. But
crossover.
The Army of Darkness really does match the Dark Sun theme, kind of just without metal, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was medieval, but the, like, just everything was desert stuff. So it kind of does remind you of Dark Sun a bit, you know, how an undead invasion of Dark Sun might go, you know, minus the car and boomstick, of course.
Yeah. And look, you know, whether you're playing, second edition or fifth edition or fourth edition, these things can be put into your game. And, you know, now you've got like, why did these come up on my tables without, you know, a good bit of thought about them? You see that and you go, hey, these guys are going to, my adventurers are going to come across a temple. Now, the temple might be a ruin or something and have something inside it. But what's outside it? Well, maybe in the past, the priest of the temple had a, you know, let's say he's a fire cleric, had a problem with a water cleric, and the fire cleric defeated the water cleric not far away from his temple. So, yeah, there's a nice little combat you could have outside, maybe a trail of information be put in there somehow, leading to the temple or vice versa.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and you know, we was talking earlier about turning undead and controlling undead, and you know, funny enough, the elemental clerics have the ability to turn undead and even control them if they're evil.
And then the Templars can control.
But druids can't. Druids, I don't believe can they?
Yeah, I don't believe they've got any turning abilities.
Crags, as we were discussing, they don't seem to have that ability. I mean, yes, they've got psionics, but they are pretty much capped there. You could change if you wanted to their armor class and their hit dice. They got pretty good hit dice, 12. Sorry, 11 in the Eras Beyond tier, which is quite good. But it looks like they lose all their other powers other than some psionics. These psionics, of course, are just sort of suggestions as well. You can always change. It makes it nice and easy to use with those there. But if you've got time to create your personalized undead, then that's where you might think of, like, you know, a rogue undead with, yeah, intelligent undead with psychoportive powers, because, you know, they sort of go together, right? Find a lot of rogue scientists will have psychoportation. It helps them get in and out.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, there's a lot you can do with the psionics on these undead. Is there any undead that are just, you know, focused on psionics though?
Your Kaishaga might be one.
Yeah, there may be there are some that could be from that. As far as like a psionic undead creature that is specifically that in Dark Sun, I'm not sure. I know in, I'll have to go look. I want to say it's the Monsters Compendium Annual number 3. They may have a psionic lich. Give me a second, I'll go look.
Yeah, they do. They have the psionic lich, which is basically a 20th level psionicist. But we don't have that in Dark Sun because the closest equivalent to a psionic lich, you know, would probably be a Kaisharga or any of the other more ancient undead, such as a Miordi or a Rage.
Yeah.
But realistically, anyone could be 20th level and psionic and undead and a certain type of undead.
Yeah, because if they retain that, yeah, it's not what class they are necessarily that makes them undead. It's usually the way in which they died, right? Mm-hmm. Human, elf, dwarf, giant. You know, like rags can be giants, and you know, so or halflings and humans. So they could have been in life a psionicist. And for whatever reason, they died, and they've come back as that, you know, but due to their sense of loyalty to the ancient gods or loyalty to their king. I mean, they can be clerics, right? So.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do there with them as far as, like, you know, player levels or class levels and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of the only issues that I've ever seen with the Monstrous Compendium, specifically the MC2 for Dark Sun, is that of the undead that they've included as priests, with the exception of the elemental cleric of fire, the other undead worship ancient deities and still have all their spellcasting powers, which I find it hard to believe unless they're getting their energy from like the gray or something.
Yeah, I think they got around that by saying that was just like belief, that they didn't actually, that those were false gods.
Yeah.
To begin with.
And we do have in Sandmarches, we've got a devoted old god, devotee. But one of the problems with it is that it takes like a day to cast a spell or something ridiculous. I'll see what I can get for you.
It's God, pretty crazy.
It is. It's just got it right here. Guardians of the Shrine. Yeah, Dead God Devotee. I'll just bring up the web page quickly. And the drawback here. Limited starting weapon proficiencies, major access to Cosmosphere, minor access to one elemental sphere, no ability to ignore gates or elements, can transform, spell casting times increased by a factor of n. So you want to cast Bless? Well, it's going to take you 10 minutes. Just to cast Bless.
I mean, that's an interesting thing, right? If you think about it, because in other words, because there are no gods, or his god is long dead, he is trying to gather that power in some other manner, and therefore gathering it, you know, it takes a while to siphon enough energy to actually cast spells, which is a really good innovative way to, you know, have somebody who, an undead creature that has the belief of in an ancient, you know, deity, and still gain some power.
Yeah. Yeah, it does put quite a big role playing spin on it, and means that their versatility in combat would probably be sort of a bit weird. But there's that. Now, moving on, do we have any other discussion on Crags, elemental cleric?
Well, let's talk about the Wracked Spirit, of which the most famous is the Dwarven Banshee.
Yeah, all right, let's go over Wracked Spirit, the incorporeal undead. Animated by their own guilt over committing some act that violated their basic nature. So maybe a trader who didn't want to sell slaves gets forced to sell slaves by some reason. Or, yeah, they've done something against their belief, okay? In such a way that it's their guilt. Their guilty spirit suffers eternally and only gains joy and peace through the act of destruction. The Dwarven Banshee, created when a dwarf forsakes his life purpose, is one of the most common. But we had players meet a different type recently as well, but Wracked Spirits.
Yeah, there's actually, game-wise, there's the Dwarven Banshee has its own monster description in the MC1 for Dark Sun, and then in MC2 is where the Wracked Spirit is described, which the version that you described is very similar to the one that Troy Denning described very early on.
Yeah.
And it looks like they made some mechanical changes where they said that they were slightly incorporeal instead of completely incorporeal. In MC2,
yeah, because in the original they were in the Terrors of the Desert, they punched you and do stuff like that.
The Dwarven Banshees are physical, are completely physical, and then in the Wracked Spirit, which it also mentions that the most common Wracked Spirit is a Dwarven Banshee, it says, except they look just as they did in the time of their death, except they are slightly transparent because part of them is still on the ethereal plane. Whereas the initial Troy Denning write-up is basically what Tezza said before, that they're incorporeal, they're tortured remnants of people who violated their basic natures. And then, of course, the most common is a Dwarven Banshee.
Yeah, yeah, so the Dwarven Banshee is the most famous one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you can make a banshee, you can make a similar thing out of just about anything on Athos in this particular case. So people are forced to do things they feel guilty about all the time. They get forced to do it. They get pushed into positions of where I've got no other way out other than, you know, or they feel they've got no other way out other than I've got to kill this child, or I've got to, you know, do some harm to someone or something, or sell slaves. Could be, you know, anything that really you think is going to put, you know, give that really hardcore guilty feeling.
Right. Yeah. You see, it's common, you know, just kind of like how Ravenloft is common with making different vampire types, you know, and all the different ones you see of that. So, you know, the Rack Spirit can certainly be like that, where you can make a different version for so many different things.
Hey, guys, I've got about 450 pounds of dog that needs to get fed right now. So I was going to say that I did put the Dragoth character sheet for any of you that are on here that want to look at it in there. And I mean, I put the time into it to like do all of his psionics correctly, using the rules correctly, you know, and all that. So he is complete along with some art. And if anyone who's listening wants to go find it, it's at Subscribestar, which is one word, .com/dark-house-rules. You can find it there.
We'll put a link in the chat as well as the podcast.
All right, I'll go ahead and add that
to
the.
I've subscribed to you, so I've got the link you made. I'll put that in.
Okay.
Thanks, Chris.
Very cool.
There you go, and I got to get out of here. I'll see you guys later. It's been fun.
Thanks for stopping in, buddy.
Thanks.
Bye.
And no, I definitely think there's a lot going on for Undead and Dark Sun.
Yep.
You know, we was talking earlier about, I think, what was it, Turning Undead and the difference between 2nd and 5th edition rules on it?
Yep. Let's finish off some. We've still got some undead to go over before we get into that subject of the control in turning dead. If we could have a look at skeletons and zombies and wraiths, then we would have covered all of them by the look of it.
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, we got skeletons and zombies. Hey. Pretty standard sort of thing for any Dungeons and Dragons game, no matter what setting you use. Now, here again,
thinking zombies.
They can be thinking zombies. One hit die skeleton that he's like, I've got no power, I can't do anything. Maybe he wants to try and communicate in some way. But yeah, they could be interesting little plot hooks or. There's something that leads you to a bigger adventure.
Well, even a skeleton talking, you know, look at the back lore, you know, the back history on that. You have the D&D cartoons that, you know, one of the famous villains from it is a talking skeleton warrior with a circlet on his head, you know. And I know they later made rules for that monster, but, you know, to everybody who was watching that was pretty much just a skeleton, a talking skeleton, you know.
That's right. You know, you're as we'll talk about controlling and unturning, you know, you go to control some undead and you like you know, you raise your holy symbol or whatever, you know, I rebuke you, and some of them turn around and one of them goes, yes, boss.
<That's> or salute,
you know, it's like, and you're like, what? Just one of them out of the blue has a little bit of intelligence. And that could reveal a lot. Again, in 2nd edition, you need to maintain your rebuke or your turning a period of time to maintain that control. But yeah, having a look at these skeletons, Fitz, June, do you have any ideas on how you could use normal skeletons other than saying, hey, I'm going to make this one a 4-hit dice, and he's got some lightning powers. Have you got any ideas for?
Well, you could have, you know, the filer that made them put magical tattoos on them so that, you know, they go off, they trigger on whatever triggers them.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, and I've also been learning about the living items and wondering how to use them because they have an intelligence and an ego, and if they could have psionic powers, and that was incorporated into a living thing or a magic item, that could be on an undead also.
Well, and so again, we're looking at undead. Like, you've got you've got normal raised dead skeleton zombies, they're mindless. So, to a degree, you'd have to go, well, it's not going to work on those. But intelligent undead? Well, good question. Does the living item, when it attaches itself to the undead, would it cause it to die, become dead itself, still function?
Or take over? Yeah.
Take over, control the undead. There's just a lot of questions there, and that's a...
And could those living items be undead themselves? It's not said, but...
Yeah. That may need to be... we might seek some input from the Dark Sun community on that one, and come up with some great ideas on how to, you know, undead halflings with life-shaped items on them. that's a nice one. We do have a couple of so skeletons. There's lots of different types of skeletons in various books. There's spiked skeletons. There's obsidian skeletons that regenerate. Got to break the crystal in it to stop it from doing it.
Giant skeletons with fire in their pelvis.
That's it. Lightning, quick lightning skeletons that are a little bit faster. When they die, they explode with a blast of shock energy in a 5-foot radius. And you can have all elemental ones doing similar sort of poison water ones that might have a poisonous decaying fumes around it, all sorts of stuff. And they are all in ways will fit into Dark Sun campaigns. And you can always customize. So as we like to say, the books are just a template, really. You can, with a bit of searching, you'll probably find something to fit if you don't manage to create it yourself.
Yeah, in terms of tier, they have special attributes and weaknesses thing.
That's right. And there's no harm in putting that on. Hey, here's a group of 10 normal skeletons and zombies, yet one of them could be a defiler. Just a 1-hit dice or 2-hit dice, just to put that little pop into your game, you know, that defiler one or that one different skeleton, it doesn't control the rest of them, but it might use some extra powers, have one or two spells to cast, which could really upset your players at the appropriate level.
I'd like to add skeleton mages in the past. I've always dug that. So
yeah,
I'm old Diablo 2 guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Regeneration, like the obsidian ones had regeneration. They can have wild talent. If you want to go for a more deadly or tough one, there's drain attributes. Punching and wrestling ones. Quite a onslaught of different undead that you can create. The last one that we have got to talk about is Thasian Wraiths, which differ from other Wraiths in that they voluntarily embrace undeath as a form of existence. They are incorporeal spirits and the servants of the dragon. They are occasionally found among the ancient ruins guarding the bodies and possessions of their dead relatives. Their dead relatives. If they serve the dragon, who might they be? Well, Templars and what champion warriors and could be, you know, noble houses or a trade house or an ancient trade house. Suggestions, fellas?
Well, I think that pretty much covers it all. I do remember something about wraiths in, I think, the second book where the prison penitent, where, what was it? Rykard went into that old fortress in the mountains where it was Boris's old stronghold or something, and there was wraiths down there.
Yep.
They co-opted him.
Yes. Well, the write-up says they can communicate verbally with the living and speak some language, same language as they spoke in life. They're incapable of, they're capable of moving between the grey and the land of the living.
Yeah.
Very
sneaky foe. You imagine having to deal with like a thief wraith that's, you know, stealing from me.
They can possess all sorts of unliving objects, ranging from creatures, scorpions, insects, and slime, to weapons or furniture, corpses. Okay, as unintelligent creatures, right? So, a corpse of a scorpion, wouldn't it be cool? You're going through the desert, you beat off a few scorpions. You laid in the waste, you're sitting down, eating some scorpion, you know, that you've cooked up while you're rendering them, and then suddenly your scorpion jumps back up and starts attacking you again. But this time, it's got powers.
Yeah, and you can tell it's dead, and you have to beat it to a bloody pulp again.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, if it didn't learn the first time, right?
That's right, but when you kill it, right, when you kill the body, but the wraith still exists and then pops out and goes, laughs at you, and that's attacking you again. It's like, what? That can be. Look, and they can only be injured by enchanted weapons or +2 or better.
That's what I was just about to say. And players would run into the same problem that the Sand Marches players ran into. Well, and it's just like you get stuck fighting a monster you can't destroy without a magic item. That's where a priest comes in, where that can enchant using spiritual weapon or something like that, where you suddenly do have a magical weapon, like Shilog from Druids or something, you know, Shiliag.
Shillelagh, I think.
Yeah, Shillelagh, it's kind of an Irish word, ain't it?
I've got to go for 2 minutes, five minutes. I'll be right back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, we're coming probably to the close before too long. You know, with undead, I can't help but think of Deadlands a little bit. And we've covered a lot of the subjects of Deadlands as far as, you know, what's been written by Athas.org. But I'm kind of curious, did you guys have any takes on, Fitz and Junior? Did you guys have any takes on Deadlands before that content was released? Like, what was it in your minds?
Well, I'm pretty new to Athas, so the whole Deadlands, you know, I thought it is pretty awesome. I like the concept and everything. I haven't used it yet.
It's a lot of content.
So I am pretty anti revised Dark Sun. So I've just taken bits and pieces of revised. I usually try to stick to the original box set, but what the Athos.org team did with the original manuscript that they got, and you know, this manuscript, if you really think about it, was given to them over 20 years ago.
Whew.
And you know, I have the original, so I know what changes they made, and you know, most of it was really just, you know, fitting the story into third edition mechanics, so to speak. But wow, they've done a good job in presenting it. My only concern with it would be that it is a high level area. And so, you know, you have to be ready for that, that it's going to be mostly high level to mid level is where you're going to start, because there's so many undead. You know, you couldn't put third level characters in there and expect them to survive for much long. You know, it just wouldn't happen.
And I do believe next week on the interview with the Pristine Terror development group members, they're going to be talking a bit about a undead player-based adventure they're going to be releasing for the Deadlands.
Yep. I won't mention anything about it. I'll let them mention it, or at least the leads that worked on it. I did not work on that project, even though I'm part of the group. But the folks that did, they put a lot of heart in it, a lot of hard work, and it came out really good.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a lot to the Deadlands. It's a big boy. It's a big book. It's got a lot of material in it. You know, and so if you're going to use it, you have to be prepared for that. I can't wait to see the player undead adventure, because that's always been a big draw of Deadlands. Is that if you are going to do a low level adventure in it, you can do it if your characters are undead PCs.
Yeah, that's right.
It works out fine then, right?
Oh yeah, I'm literally you know, again, I'll wait to for Jack and the rest of the team to get on next week and talk about it, and you know, they'll give you a better sense of what they were thinking when they were building these projects, as well as all the adventures that tie into it.
Oh yes.
Nice.
Have you guys ever actually done or had a undead PC in any of your games, Dark Sun or not?
I have, yes. Yeah.
Yep.
No, not in,
there's Damphia, which like, you know, vampire spawn there, and there's Necropolians, which are like temple undead. But
like player characters?
Yeah, player characters, yeah. Southlands by Cobalt Press has a few different ones that you can do there as well.
No, I meant well, that's, yeah, but I meant like games that you guys have DM'd or been in.
Yes, I DM'd a player that was he was essentially a ghost, but corporeal.
Oh man, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, he didn't realize he was dead for some time.
Oh, like the Sixth Sense! I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a player who went through the process to become a lich, and then in a Pathfinder game I played last year, one of the players was a ghoul. And that was pretty funny and interesting.
Oh yeah, in Pathfinder Society, I did have a Damphir character PC, and of course, you know, we've ran them in the organized play campaigns.
Very cool.
There's a bunch of other ones. and just get into. I use Shard Tabletop for 5e. And it's just loading up. But God, there's Deathless, Awakened Undead, Ashen Ford, Given Life with No Soul.
Oh, what is this? Is this like player made stuff?
Yeah, this is no. Well, Awakened Undead is from Kibble's Free Compendium. Deathless is from the Drones Toolbox. Damphia is from the Drones Toolbox. Various different sources. Some of them come from like Cobalt Press and various other publishers. A lot of this stuff, like Frog God Games, Troll Lord Games, which do 5e and Castles and Crusades. There's, I don't know, there's a couple other ones here. Necroplans, which are undead, once living creatures brought to a horrifying state of undeath through practice.
Oh, wow.
Necroplans are like a grave touched, a mortal who has died yet is still animate. They just haven't passed to the next plane yet. They are the citizens of a city called Nocturnus, deep within the Shadowfell. Pilgrims from across the plains travel there in search of the secrets to eternal life through undeath. And there's whole campaigns based on that. They include Damphia, the Deathless, and another one called Eidolon. Or Deolonai. It's a bit of a weird word. Somewhere out in the Great Wheel, if you know the Great Wheel Planescape, is a city called Manifest, where the Ethereal and the Shadowfell and the Primaterial intersect. And the end results are souls of the dead that they don't really leave. They linger in this sort of pseudo-ghost, eventually learning how to manifest bodies of ectoplasm.
Very
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, and there's
yeah.
one last one, which is the Book of the Not So Dead. and that just has a type of, you know, player character. It gives you all the stats here for each one. Various, you know, constitution plus, charisma down, that sort of stuff. A lot of things are like, as in your past life, because they're just considered another race, I suppose. That's about most of the ones that I know about. From other versions of Dungeons and Dragons. I'm not sure if they have anything particular in 3E and 4E, but these ones here are all designed for 5E.
Oh yeah. Well,
now
we're starting to come up on the 2-hour mark. So if we want to talk about turning undead, we'll probably have to get to it.
Yep, I think that's a good idea.
Radu will strangle me if it's too long.
right. Well,
thankfully so.
Well, well, turning and controlling undead. So both require you to present your holy symbol. With turning undead, you either make them flee, they sit in awe, or they turn and run away. And sometimes, if you roll well, or if you're a high enough level, you can actually destroy them outright. They will literally, you could describe it in any way, they explode, they turn to ash, they just crumble in a pile of bones to the ground. However you'd like to dramatically put it. with second edition, there's tables in the player's handbook generally for how that sort of thing works and how many you can affect. The standard is 2d6 of undead. So up to 12, if you roll well, will be affected if you roll well. And if you roll very high, you can affect an extra 2d4. Mostly when it comes to drawing. So the table indicates that if you're over like 12th level, get my chart up again.
So I guess in 5e you can't actually control the undead without a spell, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
But the turning undead is still a little similar?
Yes. Pretty much based on your level versus the level of the undead you're encountering. You just make a roll on the d20. The higher you roll, the greater the effect.
Now, when a Templar turns undead or controls them, I'm guessing he's turning it in the name of his Sorcerer King.
Correct.
And the other undead would be under the control of another Sorcerer King. They could be.
That's right. So how does it affect intelligent undead? Right. That's a, like, if we look at that in, usually in the monster description, might give you something that says they're resistant to turning by, you know, or turned as a creature of, you know, a couple of levels higher sort of thing. Dune or Thor, do you have anything on that particular issue?
You mean for just turning undead? Well, for 2E, I don't see an issue with it. The only thing with 2E is that because in Dark Sun the creatures are not standardized, you really have to just go by the hit die, which would mean that you could, in theory, can be able to control a Miordi or a Raig if they were low enough level.
Yep.
Just have to have low enough HD.
Yeah.
That's right. Unless there's some sort of caveat that says they are resist to a particular level, right? And if we look at the Terrors Beyond Tier at the undead and the list of powers they can get, spell immunity, regeneration, they can produce undead, resist magic, increase attribute, improved saves. So could be easily sort of classed as, you know, and it makes it harder to control or turn.
Yeah, so they have a special undead weakness that says susceptible, easier to turn, in other words.
Yeah.
But the for the special undead powers, for some reason it didn't have it.
Yeah, it doesn't have increased resistance. That's probably something that's fairly easily resolved. To say, hey, you know, like, it's turned as a creature 2 hit dice higher than what it is, you know, that's pretty solved. But it does give you some indications on how you should build it, because obviously if you're going to give it all in hours or something, it's going to be pretty OP.
Cool. I think that's a way to balance it right there.
Yeah. And you could do that in 5. There's 2E and 5E, you've got enough similarities that you could build your undead very much using these tables. And have that reflected in those. I mean, it's got things like susceptibility to obsidian. So, hey, I can't be hit by, you know, I can't be wounded by unless it's plus one weapon. But what if, hey, it can be affected by iron or obsidian, or it's susceptible to certain spells. That's pretty cool. But when it comes to turning and controlling them, we've got a void cleric that can't do pretty much anything but control them.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the 1994 Dragon Magazine 209, it had a lot better abilities because it had offensive and defensive abilities for undead. And of course, one of them there is, you know, immune to turning, which would work for certain creatures if you wanted them to have it. And so, which is strange because the Dark Sun article came out in 94 and Terrors Beyond Tier came out in 95. You would think that they took some of that stuff, and which they did, you could just tell by the abilities. They just didn't, you know, either for spacing reasons, they didn't add the entirety of the article, which would have probably been the best thing to do since the article is, in terms of giving undead powers, whether they're, you know, weaknesses or powers for them, it's so much better in terms of organization than the Terrors Beyond Tier book.
Nice.
Very cool.
Maybe we should get a compile a list of all those things and references and put them in a doc for people to use. That might be something good to bring it all together.
I want to say that Mark Hope and I posted it a few years ago on the Dark Sun community server, but it might have been taken off. I'm pretty sure it might have been taken off because I don't see it here anymore.
So when turning undead in 5th edition, it's fairly basic. The books themselves have got in the player's handbook, page 59, 5e player's handbook. It's got destroy undead at 5th level. So you can turn undead from 2nd level. At 6th level, you get 2 uses of your turn undead in a day. At 5th level, if a undead creature fails its saving throw against your turn in action, depends whether it's destroyed or not. So you can destroy, if you're 5th level, you can destroy a half hit dice or lower. 8th level is 1 hit dice or lower, and etc. up to 17th level where it's 4 hit dice or lower. So yeah, look at 20th, like if you were to continue that table, you would expect that at 20th level, you might be able to turn or destroy 5 die undead. There are some books which detail advanced levels that are like beyond 20th level. This outright destroys them if you are high enough level.
And that's a difference between the 2E turning and controlling tables and the 5E version. So when we think about CR for 5E, for instance, even at fifth level, in the 2E book, as a fifth level, you were only turning zombies or skeletons. And then you had a very good chance of turning a ghoul or a shadow. And after that, you know, things became a little tougher, like a white and a ghast and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Where in 2E, a half CR is just a shadow or a zombie or a skeleton that you would be able to turn because their CR is a half or less. That's right.
If they fail their saving throw against your turn undead feature, it's instantly destroyed. It doesn't give you an option for it.
Correct. Now the only problem with 5E is that it doesn't have a control undead option. It's probably because 5E has a more heroic bent to the system, so they automatically assume you're not going to be the bad guy, or controlling undead is bad.
Yeah, well, they do have one. It's a control undead spell, I believe. Now, I'm not 100% sure whether it's legit.
No, it's the control undead ability that a necromancer or a paladin have.
Yep. Okay.
But you have to be 14th level, which is, if you really think about it, that's pretty high to command undead.
That is, yeah, it's very high, yeah. Command undead, 14th level. You can use your magic to bring undead under your control. So this is only for
wizards, necromancers.
Yeah.
And then the other power is control undead, which is a level 3 Oathbreaker paladin, which basically is the same, except that, any undead whose challenge rating is equal to or greater than the paladin level's immune to it. But otherwise, if they fail their save, they have to obey the paladin's commands.
So, wizard necromancers, some paladin, and is there a spell, troll undead?
5E?
No. So, all right. So, yeah, because the one I looked at looks like it was just on a fandom wiki.
Yeah, that's not a legitimate spell.
Nothing in Ashes or Xanathar that you can think of?
No, not that I can think of.
Five E tools that might reveal something.
Yeah, no. The only thing that gives is the create undead.
Summon undead, create undead. The only two spells. 5E tool says, right. Yeah, so limited options in 5E. Not sure on 4 and 3. I think 3 has a lot of similarity to the second edition, so probably turn and control. Does anyone know about that one?
For third edition?
Third edition SRD, turn or rebuke undead. So if you turn them, they run away. If they're rebuked, they stand in awe at you by the looks of it, or cower in fear. And then they've got turn, which is if they fail their saving throw, basically.
Yeah, they actually in the third edition they definitely have a control undead spell, but it's also a high level spell. It's a sorcerer spell or a wizard spell, seventh level. So yeah. You know, you won't be doing any of that in the low to mid levels.
Yeah. Evil clerics and undead. Evil clerics can channel negative energy to rebuke, which is awe or command, control, undead, rather than channeling positive energy to destroy them. So again, it's you essentially indicating you should be an evil cleric to do this, sort of control undead. Hence the constant, hey, play the good guys.
Yeah.
And Templar and the Wizard King withhold the power to turn on a Templar?
No.
Okay.
The Sorcerer King can basically disconnect a Templar from his vortex, but what the Templar does with his spells, that's his own business.
But if he was disconnected, would he lose the ability to command or control undead?
Yeah, well, he would lose everything.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's an all or nothing thing. The Sorcerer King can't pick and choose. I mean, he can with spells, but I don't know about turning.
Yeah, no, well, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it could depend how you run the connection between your Sorcerer King and Templar. Is it based on the fact that your Templar is holding that Sorcerer King's holy symbol? That is, you know, that he can, like, charge the power of his Sorcerer King? Or is he like a warlock where there's some sort of connection that the Sorcerer King can possibly take away from the Templar? There is a couple of different ways where you can play that out. Any other suggestions there?
No, I agree with you. I think there's definitely room for variability regarding that part.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I honestly think that may cover it. We're at the two-hour mark now.
This was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yeah, we had a really good discussion and given me some good ideas and places to chase down ideas for our campaign, our Sandmarshes game, and yeah, great.
And maybe if you do this again, like another level, one thing I was curious about is the gray and how that relates in Aethys. And I think I've heard of the dark or the black. Are they the black. Same thing? Or
yes.
So maybe we could do something along on the undead, but explore, you know, those realms some more.
Well, I was actually thinking of doing a Plains of Aethys topic where we kind of go over the different lore on the planes and how it's, you know, changed over time and all that. Include the gray and the black and the hollow and stuff like that. There's a lot to it. Tim Brown did a big write-up on the planes, and then, you know, it came out again and revised in the Defiler. Was it the Defiler's Observer's book, I think?
Yeah, they're all different.
Go ahead and...